three of the 50 greatest Vikings on hand to talk about the upcoming, of course, Super Bowl and their experience, vast experiences with the Minnesota Vikings. To introduce today's panel, let me start with two-time Pro Bowl defensive tackle Henry Thomas. Hank, come on up, my friend. Yeah, come on up, Hank. Watch out for the cords. Six-time Pro Bowl tight end. Now I think he's known as Cam Jordan's father, Steve Jordan. Long-time Minnesota Viking. One of my favorite interviews of all time after games. Always great, great soundbite after the games. And couldn't be happier to see this man back in town again. I think next to Alan Page, I'd say he was the quickest defensive lineman I'd ever seen in the National Football League, and I will live with that statement as long as I live and cover football. The 1989 Defensive Player of the Year for the Minnesota Vikings, Keith Millard. Well, guys, thanks for stopping by and schmoozing here a little bit. First of all, maybe we should just establish, for those of you who were not aware of kind of the Vikings history, how many years you guys crossed paths and your various personal experiences with each other, because for the most part, it was kind of mid-'80s, a little earlier for you, Steve, I think, but you guys all played together as teammates. I'll start with you, Steve.
Yeah, no, we did. Is it?
Can you hear me? Yeah, you got to speak into it. There you go. Put it up to your mouth.
Speak into the microphone. I don't like things around my mouth. I don't like objects around my mouth. Like, except for food. Anyway, but no, so I was here through 82 through 94, 95. And so a 13-year career. And so I played with these guys. Had the pleasure and privilege of doing that. And I had a great run. And you know, my span ranged from Bud Grant as a head coach and to date myself, and then coming back toward the end was with Denny Green. So
wow.
And even quarterbacks ranging from Tommy Kramer to Warren Moon.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So, you had the whole gamut.
Yeah.
And Keith and Henry, you guys spent a lot of time together in meetings on the field and causing a lot of havoc, arguably some of the, along with Chris Dolman, one of the greatest defensive lines in the history of the Vikings.
Well, as you guys all could tell, I am the baby of the group. I mean, I came in 87, so, and I was there. I was in with Minnesota through 95, and Keith and I and Chris, we were a very tight-knit group. Sack record 1 year. You, MVP, Chris, 21 sacks in a year. So we had good times back then.
Before you talk, Keith, I think you mentioned Chris, and I think it's important to mention our prayers and our thoughts are with Chris Dolman. He had surgery this past week. Do you have any update?
He's recovering very well. He's doing well. The surgery went very well. He was I left on Saturday to go back home, and I spoke with him on the phone on Sunday. So
he is
recovering.
That's fantastic news to hear. Mr. Millard, yeah, you guys had quite a time here. We were just discussing that you were drafted by the Vikings in 1984, correct? You did not play for the Vikings in 1984. You decided to go to what was known as the USFL, right?
USFL, Jacksonville Bulls. Les Steckel was the coach that year. He drafted me, came to mini camp. We had to do that Iron Man thing. I couldn't finish it. It was pretty tough. We didn't have free agency in those days, and the USFL, you know, had a huge opportunity financially, so I couldn't pass it up. But I was miserable the whole time because how bad I wanted to play here. But, yeah, I played. So I came back in 85 when Bud came back and played with these guys for about 7 years. And we had some good times. We were a tight-knit group. Like I said, there was no free agency, so we all played together for a long time. So we were a tight-knit group, family.
That's probably one of the consequences, maybe somewhat unintended, with the league back then. As Mal was saying, you know, we didn't have free agency then. Free agency actually came in, and true free agency was in 92. As you know, we actually tried that case. We had to sue the NFL to get free agency from 89 to 92. It was tried here in Minneapolis because we wanted to be in this Correct. In this court system. And so that was great. But one of the unintended consequences is that our families got a chance to grow up together, and guys stayed together, and it was a little bit more tight-knit. You know, our kids grew up together, you know, Hank's kids, Mal's, you know, kids, and which I was shocked to see John, who's now 26, which shocks the heck out of me because I think last time I saw him, he was literally this tall kind of thing. So that's very cool. And you don't see that much anymore. Even toward the end of my career, you know, the free agency had started to really kick in, and a lot of guys were coming and going. And frankly, even as I see with my son now, you know, a lot of guys, they don't get as invested, frankly, you know, because it's like, you know, you're probably not going to be here next year, or I'm not going to be here, so I'm not going to invest in the relationship.
You feel sometimes, and you sense it, and I think it's not just in the NFL, and it's probably a good thing, obviously, Major League Baseball and everywhere. I mean, they're already talking about LeBron James going out to Golden State next year, that fans sometimes get more loyal. I mean, we know how electric this city was. You guys weren't necessarily around for much of it, but I, as many years I've covered the Vikings, I've never felt a community so involved with the football team as the Vikings fans were with this go-round. Of course, topped off by the Minneapolis Miracle, the catch by Diggs. And it seemed like all the stars were aligned for the Vikings to be playing in this game. We know the stories. We don't have to go dig deep in that whole thing again. But fans are sometimes more loyal to their teams than maybe Jerry Seinfeld had it right. You're cheering for laundry because it's a different situation now. It's a business at the same time. Should it take away from fans' enjoyment of watching their team, no matter who's wearing purple?
It's the teams. I mean, everybody, you get teams. Like, I'm a Golden State fan.
Right.
It took me a while before I became a Golden State fan. I'm still a Houston Rocket fan.
Well,
but
you should be. You live in Houston.
That's exactly right. So you love that team and the people that come in. So you get to argue about the trades they make, the people they bring in. You get to be happy about somebody that's coming in. But it's still the organization that you're rooting for.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Look at the fans here. I mean, I can go almost anywhere in the country, and there's a Minnesota Viking fan that goes, Henry Thomas, you know, because they were in love with the organization. Not just that I played that, they just recognized the fact that you were once a player there, you know.
Well, in terms of how the game has changed, I mean, we talk about the business of the game, but you guys talk about what a tight relationship you have. Is it harder, do you think, today? I mean, you can probably talk to some of these players today to kind of forge those bonds, because, you know, some guys, a lot of guys come and go, and it is a business. We know it is. The National Football League, used to many times, is not for long. It does happen, and, you know, one knee injury or one salary cap away from, you know, they're going to jettison you out of there. Does that take away from?
It does. I mean, you know, I coached in the league for a while, and it's the same thing with coaching. You know, if you're not winning the first couple of years, you're rotating coaches as well, and it's tough for the players to get tight because of free agency and you know, 1-2 years and you're done. It's really hard to build that continuity. And as a coach, coaching in the league, you could see that. You know, guys weren't as tight as like we were because they're just looking for the next buck, their next big contract, and moving on. And that's just the business we're in now. That's what's going on with the league.
What are some of your favorite Viking memories? I mean, I was sitting here yesterday listening to the older guard. I mean, Ahmad Rashad was here, and Chuck Foreman was here, and Paul Krause was here, and Greg Coleman, who I believe was a punter, was here. I'm just kidding. But, you know, they have a different, you know, you guys were kind of took the torch from them. Steve, you crossed over with them a little bit, but is it playing, you know, is it just the Sundays, or is it just the meetings, or what is it that you missed when you retired from the game as well?
I think most people will say when you retire from the NFL, like any team sport, you miss the guys. You know, you miss the locker rooms more than anything. And of course, the games are awesome. You know, that's why we were here. You know, we're all competitive. We want to get out there. We want to play. We want to perform at top levels. And so some of those real great memories were when we were, you know, playing well and having fun. I remember when we made our run, you know, to the NFC Championship game, and a lot of people didn't know much about us, and we, you know, some people even thought we backed into the playoffs, mm-hmm. if you will, and we go on the road and we, you know, beat the Saints, and we go on the road and AC and Wade Wilson, you know, step up and have a humongous game, and we beat San Francisco in San Francisco against Joe Montana and
they
Jerry
benched
Rice.
Joe Montana in that game, put Steve Young in. I never thought I'd ever see that ever. I don't think it ever happened again.
Right. It's a lot of pressure on him back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of pressure on him.
Yeah, yeah. And then when we went on to Washington from there. So when you talk about fond memories, that certainly was one of them, just to run, because while a lot of people didn't put a lot of stock in our team, we just knew amongst ourselves, man, we got a squad here. We got some guys that can show up and can play and just let us go, and we're going to make some things happen.
Sure. Remember, that was also the strike year, so we missed four
games. That's right.
Why we ended up backing into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Scavs lost all three or four games.
You did back.
We had a lot of work to make up.
Yeah. We had work to do.
You've had some interesting coaches to play for, and the one character I think about, and I can't imagine if Jerry Burns was head coach today with these live press conferences, they'd have to have a 7-second delay for pretty much everything that came out of his mouth. I mean, poor Mike Zimmer swore inadvertently last year. We were doing a post-game show, and it was like, oh, my God, you should have heard the recordings of stuff we have with Burnsy. But if you guys could all just – I mean, I think it's fun because, you know, we played with Bud, Steve, but and Bud, I saw Bud was at a party last night, believe it or not, 90 years old, still doing his thing. But Burnsy was a character.
I mean,
he should have had probably the job when they gave it to Steckel in 84. He was passed over. But he finally got his opportunity. And a lot of people feel that he created the West Coast offense. I mean, Bill Walsh got credit for it, but he was an offensive genius, wasn't he?
No, he absolutely was. He was one of the first guys that, you know, had and specifically drafted guys and brought guys to the team, like a Ricky Young, a Ted Brown, you know, Darren Nelson,
right,
who can come out of the backfield and you know, run that option on the linebacker, get loose and do that sort of thing, who you now see, you know, like this year, Alvin Kamara with the Saints, that guy in persona. But Jerry Burns was the one that kind of perfected that, even getting the tight ends involved. You know, Joe Sensor, who came before me, Joe was all pro, and he was getting the tight end down the field, running, you know, corner routes, and I was able to, you know, fill in that gap as well. But he was definitely one of the innovators in terms of an offensive standpoint, for sure.
I can't imagine he pushed your buttons at all, Keith. Did you guys go at it at all?
Yeah, not Burns. He was more of an offensive guy.
He was. He left you alone. Did you have Floyd Peters?
We had to deal with that dude.
You had Sergeant Rock.
Yeah, that guy was a nightmare. You're hungover and he's hungover, and it's that first practice in the morning. You had to deal with that guy. It wasn't fun, trust me. He was a beast. Great guy to play for, though. Love him to death.
You know, you talk about some fond memories. You know, training camp was fond memories because it was rough.
Mankato, yes.
It was rough, but and we did two-a-days. You know, it was not like
the
country club, you know, of the day. But it was, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of two-a-days. And so we tend to grind on each other a little bit, and Keith and Sarge, you know, they got into it a couple times.
I can't imagine.
Oh my gosh, it was hilarious. And we thought they were going to go to blows one time. You know,
been a lot of times.
A lot of times, actually. You know, Sarge actually one time had to brace himself. Like if I take one on the chin, I'm get ready for
prison guard, all that.
That's right. Awesome. But I think maybe that some of that stuff is missing from today's game, because it is. More of a business, and guys are coming and going. But as we kind of segue into what's happening here, Sunday, there is a football game to be played, and is what the Patriots have done under Belichick and Brady, which is really unusual in this day and age, because it's so hard to have a 49er, a Cowboy, a Steeler dynasty, because players never left until those teams. And even the great Viking teams going back to the 70s, you knew all those guys would line up week to week and year to year. Does that make the New England situation, from your perspective, guys, more unique? Obviously, they don't win every year.
Well,
is it just about Tom Brady?
I think it's more Belichick.
Do you really?
I played one year under Belichick. My last year was his first year in New England.
Oh, no kidding.
And he does a great job in selling the team concept, because you can take half of their guys off their team and put them on someone else's team, and they're not as effective.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Because it's such a team concept and how to play together. He gets everybody to buy in it. And the thing that Tom Brady does over and over again is just excellence, how he pays attention to the detail. And that's the whole organization, from Mr. Kraft down.
I think when we hear Belichick's mumbling kind of during news conferences, and you go, how does he motivate people? How does he get them to do what you're talking about, Henry? Because you think, like, he would be just kind of like, you know, go ahead and.
To tell you the truth, he's probably one of the funniest coaches I've ever played for.
People would find that hard to believe.
They would, but nobody would. I was the guy that would giggle in the back, but because when he said it, you didn't know if it was coming off as humor or if he was really digging on you. But, you know, for the guys that he was talking about, it was like, and the other guys is like.
Right, right.
You know, but he's a great communicator. I mean, he has a diverse amount of friends that would come to the locker room when we first started. I mean, I've been in a locker room putting my cleats on, standing next to Steven Tyler. The next week, it's Colin Powell. And I'm like, how are these guys getting in here? And they're all hugged up and talking with him.
Right.
He is a dynamic guy, and his approach to the football is really pay attention to detail, do your job, come in, and everybody buys into it because, I mean, he's made it so successful, people want to go there and play for him. And I don't know a player that ever played for him that said, I don't like playing for him.
Interesting.
So I would probably give a different perspective, you know, one from the outside.
Okay, one from the outside.
So I think
Bill which Belichick, doesn't count because it's on the outside. I was inside, so that's more important.
I understand.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right, I'm just giving you a different perspective. So I think that Belichick is a very good coach. Like I say, pays attention to the detail. He really sells that. But I also think, you know, New England without take Tom Brady out of that mix, game over.
Yeah. No way. They've won 11 games.
They won 11 games for Matt Castle one year.
I get that.
But
Garoppolo, he's out for the first. They bring it to plug another guy in.
Right. Those weren't big time games. You know, you're talking.
You know what? It feels personal over here. It feels personal. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
from the outside.
I'm gonna give it to you.
You're just tired of seeing good football. That's what you're telling me.
I'm gonna give it to you real. If Tom Brady's not there, New England doesn't have that kind of success. They will have a large amount of success, more than most, but they won't have, you know, five Super Bowls. You know, or you know, they won't have that like a Brady.
We're contemplating the ifs and the what about.
Let me tell you another thing, because I know this from other players who have been there. Fear. A lot of people fear Bill Belichick.
Absolutely.
You know, because if you're not performing, you're out of there.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'm going back. When he was at Cleveland or Cincinnati?
Cleveland.
How much success did he have there?
None.
Well, he was just starting out. Drop the mic.
Mic drop. Well, he's 40, and he was from the outside. Mic drop.
He's growing. Yeah. It was growing. Like he was developing that.
Keith, I mean, you played against Montana and Steve Young, and you watch a Brady. I mean, you as a defensive lineman whose job it was to make their life miserable, what are your impressions of how he's done it at his age? We saw Brett Favre here in 2009 at the age of 40 lead the Vikings to within a whisper of getting to the Super Bowl, but then it kind of all came crashing down on him. And I think Brady's a much different sort of physical specimen, the way he takes care of himself in his own way.
I had the privilege of coaching against him a few times when I was coaching at Tennessee. He's a sneaky guy. I mean, you look at him, he's old. He's a kind of a tall, lanky guy. He doesn't look like he can run, but he's got great awareness as far as from like getting the rush against him and putting the plan together and all that. I mean, he's really good at escaping. He keeps his eyes downfield, but he's just really, really good at getting the ball out. He's getting the ball is out. I mean, he knows where it's going. He reads coverages really well. I mean, he's been playing a long time. But the thing that really surprised me about him was his ability to escape and get away from people and keep things moving.
Well, all you guys came from different points around the country. Henry, you're down in Houston, and I know last time I saw you was at Ahmad Rashad's Ring of Honor, and you were telling me some amazing stories of recovery during the Houston floods, which were tragic and very. Also, congratulations to you and helping so many people down there. And Keith, you're out in the Bay Area.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I mean, Henry did a lot, and it was an amazing personal story as well. And I know you'd share that. And Keith, you're out in the Bay Area, as you have been for many years, and you're out in Zona, my friend. So what do you think about having this Super Bowl here, coming back, dealing with the cold and having the bold north and having this opportunity? Do you think it's being well received around, I mean, besides the media jackals like myself, from the national perspective, complaining about the cold weather? How do you think it's going so far?
Well, you know, again, just outside, I flew in from Arizona yesterday. I was here earlier in the week, flew back. But anyway, I was at the Phoenix Open, Waste Management Phoenix
Open.
Whoa!
Yeah. Down goes Asera.
Down goes Frazier.
Two-eye.
Trainer.
Oh, man.
Yeah, trainer.
Oh.
You're all right. You're good.
And only 300 pounds.
Right. And S.A.
Just
actually,
don't hurt your voice.
Yeah.
S.A. We know not to sit in those kind of chairs.
Yeah, thanks for the heads up on that one. Shall we sing your songs? Yes. We're going to cut that one back. Hey, yeah. You might want to get up. Oh, no, you're safe.
Right.
You're good.
Yeah. Sitting sideways.
Sit on that one.
Yeah, you're not 300 pounds, but.
Sit in that one. Yeah. You know what? Somebody give him one of them stools.
Right. Yeah, and S.A. looks better than most, you know. No doubt.
Right.
No, that's right.
So do I.
Yes. I need that.
Yeah. You got a good attorney?
Yeah. I'm sure you do. But like I said, you know, at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, it was 75 degrees and sunny yesterday.
Right,
so 24 hours ago, I was, out on the course. But you know, people were talking about the Super Bowl and being here and what you see on the media, like showing things out on the mall, which is really interesting. Oh, you know, I thought, I'm a native of Phoenix as well. So coming here when I played, I thought, boy, this is going to be a real stretch. After a while, you get used to it. The people here are so great. You know, after my kids were all born here. So they don't know any better. They just think it's great.
Right.
They think the weather's great anyway. But it's amazing. And then you look out like at the
going
on
the
mall.
Look at that scene up there. Yeah, it's crazy.
And those people out there, they're like, you know, this is, you know, I'm out
it's
here.
The Mall of America.
Yeah, I'm doing my thing, right? You know. And I, on the other hand, as I walked over here, I'm thinking, man, I think my ears are going to fall off. You know, I got nothing. My blood is like water right now. So but it's great. I think it's really good for people to see that around the country and see people really embrace the whole, you know, coal culture and that sort of thing.
Right.
The concerts bandstand outside.
Oh, they're still doing it. Yeah, down here.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm going to last very long at that concert outdoors. Well. But I applaud the effort for sure.
Yeah, it's been outdoor band. Yeah. But you guys missed the time to play outdoors at Met Stadium, so that was a whole discussion here yesterday.
You guys always said like the natives, the real.
Yeah, you guys are tough.
They said we missed something.
Well, you know what? It's kind of ironic because the Vikings made their foundation was built on playing these games with no heaters on the sidelines. These classic games you see NFL films where they beat the Rams and you can see their breath coming out of their mouth. And yet, here's now we have a Vikings indoor team, and I want to ask you guys this. You know, all of a sudden they're playing and they beat New Orleans here in the Miracle Play. They go outside, and it seems like the teams that are indoors going outside, at least in championship type games, don't fare as well. Is that really a factor, or is that just a number?
It was for me.
It was, that's a factor. It's a factor. I'm not going to lie.
It wasn't cold in Philadelphia.
It's hard to play in the cold.
Yeah, well, it wasn't cold in Philadelphia. That was easy. But when you talk about going into games, I mean, we played a game, and I remember we went to New York for a playoff game.
I remember that one.
And it was like, I think 9 degrees base temperature, and with wind chill, it was below and all that. As a receiver, and the technology is different. You know, we didn't have the gloves like they have today.
Correct.
And that ball comes in, it's like a rock. You know, and I mean, literally, you feel like you're going to break a bone or something when you're blocking. People, your skin.
Blocking?
Yes.
I just thought you caught balls. Don't
get it twisted. Yeah.
People that was Mike Mularkey's job.
Yeah, people just recognize me for that. But yeah, when I hooked Refrigerator Perry at the Chicago Bears back in the day. On a reach block.
Man.
Yeah, but I tell you, you know, your skin just peels. You know, you hit somebody and your skin just peels off.
Oh, boy.
And you find out about it much, you know, later when you're taking a shower, you know.
Remember, Bud never practiced in the bubble. We always stayed outside. He never let us wear gloves. I remember that because I was, like, looking for him. Wear the gloves. You can't wear the gloves.
Right.
So he was... He was huge on torturing us because he knew if you got in the game, it'd be a lot easier.
Psychologically, it would be.
Exactly.
I got more questions to ask these guys, but we do want to, I think we got like, 10, 15 more minutes. If anybody has a question from the audience for these gentlemen about today's game, the Super Bowl, their experiences, please just raise your hand. We'll get a mic to you or just shout them out. So,
hardest guy to tackle.
Hardest guy to tackle.
For me, honestly, it's between Bo Jackson and Earl Campbell.
Ooh.
I got to play him my rookie year, and he was an old man. He was tough to bring down. He hurt you.
I played with Barry and against Barry, and it was so much nicer being on his team.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you Barry Sanders. You can't get a piece of him. You know what I'm saying? We're talking about boom.
Yeah, it was tough to break that guy down. Yes.
What made him so good? Just the shiftiness or just the strength, everything?
Just his ability to see the field. I mean, like when you're going to make a tackle and you think he doesn't see you, and he hits the brakes or put a spin move on you, and you look very – I mean, I have a picture at home that he signed for me when I was there.
Yeah.
And it's a great
poster.
Picture. Oh, yeah. Look like I'm about to kill him. I'm glad it's a picture and not a video. Because 39 yards later, he was handing the ball to the ref. There you go. So he was difficult for me to get down.
Yeah.
It took a lot of guys. A ton of them.
Yeah, you had to surround them.
Yeah.
Anything else? Anybody have any questions right now? Otherwise, I'll just continue with the conversation up here. In terms of today's Vikings team, you look at it, and there's a lot of talk already about the quarterback position. The Vikings have three free agents. And again, you talk about free agency, Steve, going back that whole discussion. Kirk Cousins has been in town. Drew Brees will probably go back to New Orleans, where your son is playing right now. But he's technically, I guess, could be on the open market if he chose to do so. Is it the ultimate? Do you invest heavily? Do you look at that guy and go, we got to invest heavily in him because he's the guy? Or do you look at, geez, Philadelphia lost their starting quarterback. Nick Foles could lead the Eagles to a Super Bowl championship on Sunday because they also have a really good football team built around him.
Right. Well, I think just in terms of the free agency thing, like I said, there's just so many moving parts and pieces. And for the Vikings, the great news for them is, they've got a window. And in terms of, that defense is going to be good for the next couple of years. And it could be good for longer, but the reality is in the NFL, like you say, not for long. Guys are going to get paid because they're playing so well, so you can't pay everybody and keep them here. And that's the one thing about free agency. Like in the real world, you have the opportunity. If you're performing well, you need to go where you can, make the best living for you and your family.
Does the money once in the NFL is different than other sports because basically what you are guaranteed is your signing bonus and whatever you play for that first year, as opposed to like if you sign a 4 or 5 year contract, you're not getting that money unless you complete it. But when you get that big signing bonus, is it your opinion that does money ever affect the motivation of players, given the ferocity of the game, we know the injuries and all that, or is it just still once they get between the lines on a Sunday, you're just thinking about being as competitive as possible?
I think the kind of money that they're making now gives them the opportunity to actually evaluate their health. You get a big contract, you play the 4 years, you can actually say, how am I feeling? What was our concussion protocol? What's your name?
Yeah.
What day it is?
Right.
You're good.
A little different protocol, you guys had, right?
That was the advanced protocol.
When I first got there, it was smelling salts.
How many fingers do I have up?
You're good.
Two.
Close
three.
Enough.
Yeah, close enough. Yeah, yeah. If they held up three and you said two, it was like, well, it's a roundup factory. Okay, you're good.
Okay.
But the money
sad,
definitely.
But true.
The money definitely gives them an opportunity to evaluate their health long-term-wise. Because, if you're guaranteed $30 million, that's life-changing, down the line.
Right.
So they can actually, we were guaranteed, what you got, $100,000 signing bonus?
Something like that.
We'll be back tomorrow. Yeah. We'll be back when that runs out.
Right.
Keith, you've been coaching, and Steven, you guys have been so close to the game. Especially youth football, everything else. A lot of people are really wondering about the safety of the game itself and whether advancement in helmet technology or is it a matter of coaching at the high school level, because it seems to be the concussion thing, of course, is once you get one, could be in high school, that it's the repetitive blows that really does take a toll. And you guys have had teammates, I've had good friends that played for the Vikings, unfortunately, who are no longer with us because of advanced issues with CTE. So
I don't think they could ever. I don't think they could ever fix that problem unless they do something with the helmets. The only thing that's good is obviously they got the protocol. They got stuff in place where if guys are dinged or not right, they're going to automatically take them out.
Yeah,
I know they've had a few mishaps this season, but it's still a work in progress. But at least they're doing something.
Okay.
At least they're doing something to protect the players.
The one thing I would say that's encouraging, and you're right, it's a sad situation. We've been talking about concussions since the 80s, and if not the 70s. And frankly, the NFL turned an eye away from it, kind of thing.
Did.
and therefore we had the settlement. And the settlement is not a good deal either. That's another sidebar issue. It's not good for the players. It's not good for the league, to be honest. Only in the regard that the perception of what it amounts to is not good for the league. Financially, it's great for the league because they pretty much get away with not a lot of money. But the deal is on that. It is encouraging because when we played, we were in that era, probably the most at-risk era, which was the 80s and 90s. Because in the 70s, you know, guys were hitting hard, but you didn't have this high-performance training. You know, you had big guys, but they weren't
You had Alan Page playing defensive tackle 230 pounds.
Right.
And Jim
right.
Marshall playing right. 225 pounds.
Right. And now you have, like, you know, when Chris Dolman came in, Chris was kind of, no slight to Mal, but, you know, Chris was that first prototype that came in at 270 that ran a 4.6 at 6.6. You know, now you had some of those, but it was kind of uncommon. In today's world, all these guys, I mean, you know, Cam, you know, ran at 290, ran a 4.71 at 290. You know, Dontari Poe ran a 4.84 at 3.48.
I was there.
Yeah, right. You know, jeez. I mean, so those are ridiculous numbers. So you start to bring that into the equation, and there's cause for alarm. But where I'm going with this is that in the 80s, we were being taught to go, see what you hit and hit with your head. You know, the Jerry Glanvilles of the world, the Buddy Ryans of the world, you know, a target, go hit him with your head, knock him out.
Right.
That was not good. So in today's world, they're finally teaching them better, and they're going all the way down the Little League, as Keith knows.
Right.
You know, you got to have that. You got to be certified now. You know, so you're teaching the kids the right way to do it. Put your shoulder in it. Take your head out of it. So if I'm a parent today, I would be more encouraged with letting my kid participate in that because I think they're going to do better long term. Whereas guys like us, you know, we were just out there, you know, getting beat up a little bit. And even as a dad with a son in the league, you know, my wife, I tell you, my wife, she's pretty clear about it. She would like for my son to quit today.
No kidding.
No question.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But at the same time, I know that he's, you know, 28 years old. He's at the top of his game.
Right.
You know.
Sure.
He's invincible, like we all were when we were 20s. Yeah. Just remember
especially
back.
Keith.
Yeah, particularly Keith, yeah. And so, you know, I feel better about it now because, again, you know, the protocols are in place. It's a little better deal. So.
But it seems like every time the question comes up, you know, even those who more than, unfortunately, aren't maybe dealing with the extreme of a CTE situation or anything, that if you had to do it all over again, seemingly everyone I've talked to said, yes, I would. That the game was still gave me more than I ever could have imagined, and I would
absolutely.
You guys would agree with that.
Yeah, even if I couldn't change anything, I'd do it all over again the exact same way.
Yeah, I think also to what Hank is saying though, I think the money today gives guys options because.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, when it comes down to free agency and contracts, it is money. But it's kind of different things to different people, right? Because, you know, just as that relates to, say, a Drew Brees could get $20 million, $25 million, whatever he wants.
Right.
But he doesn't want to go anywhere at this stage of his career. He wants to be with Sean Payton.
Yeah. Correct.
And he wants to, you know,
finish his career there.
Yeah, he wants to finish his career there. But at least guys with this kind of money that they're making today can say, hey, after year seven, like a couple of the guys did, the guy from San Francisco and some others, and just say, you know what, I'm done. You know, I've made enough money. I want to enjoy my kids, my family.
Well, Barry Sanders, you mentioned, Robert Smith, two guys, running backs, both could have continued to play and make a lot of money.
Yeah.
They walked away from the game, the top of their game, really. So, get any predictions you want to make? We got a couple more minutes to go. You guys are, I mean, we're not emotionally involved in this game as we look at the catch here.
I think Henry is very emotionally involved.
Are you, Henry?
The relationship between him and Belichick seems very
good. You guys are pretty tough.
Seem to be going in a different direction. I don't know. I could be wrong.
That 1 year.
Yeah.
Really
yeah.
I did it for you, Henry.
Yeah.
Well, then, in that case, I'm picking the Patriots to win 27-17.
Shocker.
All right.
Because of a bromance. Okay.
Yeah, the bromance.
I think the Patriots are going to win, too, because of the things that we talked about, Brady and Belichick.
And after what they did last year against Atlanta, how do you – I mean, Brady, what's going to hurt him? Getting down by two touchdowns?
Foles.
Yeah,
make him one-dimensional.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think, again, it'll be New England. But one of the things I've come to grips with is if you want to beat the Patriots, you have to be at least up – two scores with 2 minutes left to go in the game.
Right.
At least two scores
seems to be
with
the case.
2 minutes left in the game.
Right.
You can log that because if it's just you're up one score within 2 minutes, that's a done deal. He's going past that. You know, that's a no-brainer.
You
got to be up two.
Yeah, you guys are all sticking around for the weekend as long as you can be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seeing some old teammates. I mean, this is quite a – And I it is a family, and I think that's the one thing. It's great to see you guys because I've had great associations with all of you. I mean, much more so than, you know, the young guys today. Yeah. And I think of the fond memories I had doing football shows with you and with Studwell and Darren Nelson and all those guys. Just had so much fun. And maybe it wasn't so much a business then, but boy, we had a blast. And this is why the Vikings organization is so special, because of guys like Henry Thomas and Keith Millard and Steve Jordan, because the legacy continues on, and hopefully the next generation. Because I really do think the Vikings have a bunch of really good guys on their team right now. And they're out there doing stuff in the community, even though they have the you know, they got the disappointment of losing the opportunity to play here. I see so many of them out. They've been at the Mall of America. They've been doing a lot of charity work. They're everywhere, and I think that says something about the organization, but more in particular about the players individually as well. So I want to thank Henry Thomas, Mark, and Keith Millard, and Steve Jordan. Unless anybody has any final questions for coming out here for a little chalk talk over the noon hour here at Randall's.
All right.
And Johnny, wherever you are.
Yes, when he gets here, when he wakes up, he'll be here.
Where is exactly. Come on by. Enjoy the rest of the weekend, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.